Tonight's shiur dedicated Le'ilu Nishmas Rivka Bas Reb Avram, as well as Refuah Shleima for Chaim Yeshua Ben Hendel. So tonight we have the privilege of starting a double parsha. We have both parshas, Achrimais and Kedoshim, and we're going to try to see how much we can cover of both the parshas. Usually I have a hard enough time getting to just one parsha. Trying to cover two parashas will definitely be a little bit of a challenge, but we will see how much we can get to this evening, how much we can talk about for both parashas Achrimais and Kedoshim as well. Let's just quickly do a little bit of an overview of what parashas Achrimais and Kedoshim has in store. So parashas Achrimais is interesting. The beginning of parashas Achrimais discusses heavily the avodah of the Beis Hamikdash, the avodah of Yom Kippur, the entire Yom Kippur process, what was done in Yom Kippur, which for many of us is foreign. Many of us, it's actually interesting, when Yom Kippur comes, we should really go back to this week's parasha and spend some time focusing, because as we'll see this evening, there are many messages from Yom Kippur that are found in this week's parasha that are really not just for Yom Kippur, but they're really timely messages for all year long, which Belinette will focus on this evening. So that's obviously one big part of the parasha, is discussing the Avodah Yom Kippurim. Then the Torah takes a discussion about Shchut Eichutz. The Torah talks about shechting either with intention to eat outside or shechting it in the wrong place. Then the Torah teaches us about learning from our neighbors. The Torah reminds us about don't pick up bad habits from the nations of the world that you've been exposed to. Then the Torah predominantly discusses the Arayis and Parashas Achrimais. The bulk of the people that you're not allowed to have relations with, a lot of what we're learning in the Sunday morning shir, is found in both in Achrimais and in Kedoshim. And then we come to Parashas Kedoshim, and Parashas Kedoshim is loaded up with mitzvahs. There's 64 psukim in Parashas Kedoshim, and 51 mitzvahs found in Parashas Kedoshim. That's, statistically speaking, there's a lot of mitzvahs compared to the amount of psukim. So I got very lucky. My bar mitzvah parasha was Parashas Kedoshim, but it was a leap year. So I only had Parashas Kedoshim, not Achrimais Kedoshim. So I had 64 psukim. My younger brother's bar mitzvah parasha was Parashas Nasa. So he used to make fun of me. He used to say, oh, you're a big talker. You read Parashas Kedoshim, 64 psukim. He had Parashas Nasa. So I said back to him, Parashas Nasa is all repetitive. Once you get to Chamishi, it's the same thing. B'yayim HaRishon, B'yayim HaSheni, B'yayim HaShlishi. It's repetitive. So it's not necessarily much harder than Parashas Kedoshim. But Parashas Kedoshim is only 64 psukim. But again, 51 mitzvahs jammed packed. We have to try to get to some of them, as many of them are ben Odom L'Chaveroi. Which again, another thing we want to think about as we read Parashas Achrimais Kedoshim is that we're holding now at the time of Svira. I don't mean the mitzvah of counting Svira, I mean the time of the Meisei Talmid Rabbi Akiva, the time of when Rabbi Akiva's students died, which is the time when we work on Ben Adam L'Chaver, when we work on interpersonal relationships, because interpersonal relationships are very essential for Kabbalah Satera. That's the connection between Rabbi Akiva's students dying now and us counting up to Svira Sa'imer, because in order to get to Torah, we need to have perfection in our Ben Adam. We cannot get Torah, we cannot be a base kibbutz for Torah unless we perfect our Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, which is what we're focusing on now during the times of Avelos of Rabbi Akiva students, and that we'll see is also very much connected. And I have to also add that I will connect this week's parsha to what took place last night in Minnesota. I know this is officially a Chumash class, but I mentioned it to my Talmidim in Yeshiva this morning, and I believe we need to speak as Americans and as Jews, we need to speak about righteousness. But Tzedek Tishpoit, we'll talk about this week's parasha. Judgment and judgment and cases have to be honest. What took place last night, in my humble opinion, was a court that was not judged honestly, which perhaps could be the end, in my opinion, of the judicial system in this country, which was the one part of this country that was not focused on politics, it wasn't based on politics. And if we lose that, it's a very scary thought. So Bli Neder, we'll try to tie that into this week's parasha as well. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. Let's start from the beginning of the parasha. The Torah opens up with a very strange psukim layout. The Torah opens up with some very strange psukim. It starts with Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe. Hashem speaks to Moshe. Achrei Moshe Shnei Bnei Aaron. After the passing of Aaron's two children, because they got too close to Hashem, they died. And then Hashem says to Moshe, Taber al Rechicha, I want you to tell your brother, tell your brother Aaron that he's not allowed to go anytime he wants into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He's only allowed to go on Yom Kippur. So what was the first pasuk? The first pasuk was Hashem telling Moshe Rabbeinu something after Aaron's children died, and then go tell Aaron. What was the need of the first pasuk? So Rashi quotes a Medrash. The Medrash asks us, what exactly is this first pasuk? So the Medrash is in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, We'll see why this is important to know who the Baal HaMedrash was. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that the opening psukim in this week's parasha is a mashal. What's the mashal? You have a guy who's sick, he goes to the doctor. Oh my Lord, the doctor tells him, the doctor gives him very clear instructions. Don't eat this, don't do this, and you'll feel better. Then another person comes and tells him, the doctor tells him, listen, I see the condition that you have, and based on your condition, if you're going to eat this and you're going to do that, it's not going to work. And then another person comes and tells him, listen, buddy, follow the doctor's direction, because I saw someone who didn't follow the doctor's directions, and he died. Says the Medrash, who are you going to listen to? You can listen to the doctor, you can listen to the guy who tells you, listen, my next door neighbor suffered from this ailment, and he didn't listen, and he dropped dead. Who are you going to listen to, Dr. Medrash? Zezirzu Yosef Minarishin. There's no doubt that the second report, the second person, will make you be more careful than the first one. Why? Because the second person is telling you testimonial of real facts. The doctor is just telling you statistics. He's telling you what they taught in the medical school. But the second guy is telling you, listen, I'm telling you, I saw this happened. Says Rashi, that's the pshat over here. Hashem is telling Moshe, don't just tell Aaron halacha that he's not allowed to go in. Tell him, listen, look what happens. I'll show you firsthand as testimonial that when someone went in when he wasn't supposed to and they died. So therefore, the first opening pasuk is to drum home the point that it's not just a regular commandment that Hashem is saying, I don't want you to do it. Hashem is saying, look what happened to those who disobeyed. Be careful. Be very afraid. This is a very, very risky endeavor to go where you don't belong. Now, it reminds me of, it used to be, I don't know if they still do it, it used to be the commercials to get kids to stop smoking. They used to have a smoker who smoked his whole life, and he says, look, I'm dying from lung cancer, don't smoke. Now, we all know that has a much stronger impact than if the Surgeon General tells you don't smoke. You see a guy who's, walks around with an oxygen tank, and he can barely breathe because he smoked his whole life. We see B'chush much clearer. So Aaron HaKohen was learning up close. Don't just rely on the commandment of Hashem. Look what happened. Look what happened to your children. Your children disobeyed the commandment, and we see what happened. So that has a much stronger impact on a human being. But Reb Steinman in his Sefer asks a very geshmak akasha. We mentioned last time we talked about Nadav Avihu's passing in Parsha Shemini, and the Midrashim talk about it in this week's Parsha. There's like 7 pshatim on why Nadav Avihu died. This pshat only makes sense if what Nadav Avihu did wrong was coming into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So Zakib Steinman, it works very nicely because the Balaz ben Azariah is the one who quoted this Medrash. He's the exact same one who holds that's why they died. So it's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah l'shitasei. He's saying that the Torah opens up with this commandment of don't come into the Kodesh HaKadoshim because that's why Nadav Avihu died. And now Hashem is giving you a up-close in person, practical, reality check to look what happens if someone does it. And therefore it works out very nicely. But Reb Henoch Leibowitz is bothered with Akasha. Me and you need to be scared sometimes. We regular folk sometimes will hear something, but it won't have the impact until we get the life scared out of us. Many people took them a while to get used to really being afraid of Corona. Many people in the beginning, thought Corona, again, a lot of us didn't know a lot about it. But even those of us, it's not such a big deal. And then you have someone get Corona, or a family member, and you realize this is a serious thing. My parents both got Corona first last year, Pesach, and they were very sick, extremely sick. And it taught at least me and my family that this is a serious thing. And then I got it and I realized how serious it really is. But for many of us, we need to see things to take it seriously. But not Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen needs to be scared to listen to Hashem. Me and you, we need to be scared because we're not such maminim. We're not such a madrego. So the best way to get us to do a mitzvah is to scare the life out of us and say, listen, you do X and Y, look what will happen to you. But Aaron HaKohen doesn't need that. So for Tim Henoch Leibowitz, why did Aaron HaKohen need to be scared? So he explains a very interesting insight. He says in life, we have two things in us. We have what's called our emotional side and our intellectual side. He says many of us, intellectually speaking, we know what's right and wrong. But sometimes intellectual is not enough. Sometimes we need emotional. Why is it that some of the best speakers, the best inspirational speakers, don't necessarily work? They don't try to talk to your intellect. They talk to your emotional side. Right? What's a story? When I tell you a story about something, it's not your intellect that's being motivated. It's your emotions that are being motivated, right? The best speakers out there talk to your emotions. They don't talk to your intellect, which is a separate shmooze. I think we mentioned this once. There is a big debate amongst Gedolim. What is the proper way to give over Musar to the next generation? It comes up in this week's parasha. So one way you can give them Musar is you can talk to their emotions. So one way you can talk is to their intellect. You explain to them intellectually why Averis are bad and Mitzvahs are good, or you tell them emotionally. You tell them stories, and you yell, and you scream, and you cry. So there's a shaila today, exactly what's the best way to be mechanech children. But in any case, for most of us, practically speaking, if you look in the world, who are the best inspirational speakers, it's not because they appeal to your intellect, it's because they appeal to your emotions. So said Reb Henoch, the issue over here is that Aaron HaKoyin, maybe mentally he understood the Aver, but there was an emotional part that needed more chizik. That's what Reb Henoch Leibowitz explains. And then he says, more than that, he says that this wasn't just for Aaron. This was for Aaron, who bonded in the future generations. This tzibur of HaKadosh Baruch wasn't just for Aaron. Maybe Aaron ain't a chanami. Aaron had enough on his own intellectually and emotionally to be careful with this Aveira. But he wanted to drum this Aveira home for future generations, for future Kehanim, for future Kehanim Gedolim. That this should be something taken very, very seriously. And that's why he had to use the emotional tactic and not just the intellectual tactic. If Moshe Bick, in his Sefer, he explains it a little differently. He says that on this pasuk, so there's a medrash. The medrash says that Aaron HaKohen was not allowed to go into the Lefnai Lefnim whenever he wanted. He was only permitted access on Yom Kippur. But Moshe Rabbeinu was permitted to go anytime he wanted. Moshe Rabbeinu had permission to go Lefnai Lefnim anytime he wanted, but not so his brother Aaron. So a very strange medrash. Why should it be that way? Why should it be that Aaron HaKohen is denied access while Moshe Rabbeinu has unlimited access? So Rav Moshe Bick has a very nice pshat. He says, how do you read the pasuk? What does the pasuk say? Achrei Moshe b'nei Aaron, after the passing of Aaron's two sons, b'karvasam lefnei Hashem v'yimusu. They got very close to Hashem. So Rav Moshe Bick says that they got to a very high madrega. They reached a very, very close relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'yimusu. But they had to die. Why? So he explains that when a person gets a very, very special, unique, individual relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it can lead to gaiva. When you reach a madrig, when you're a baal madrig, and you're very connected to Hashem, it leads you to be haughty. So he says, that's what Nadav Avihu did wrong. They became a baal gaiva. Avada, they reached that madrig, but that madrig carries along with it the potential for gaiva. So he explained, that's why Aaron HaKohen was not allowed to come lefnai lefnim, because coming lefnai lefnim would create such a high level, which can lead itself to gaiva. In Cain, he explains, Moshe Rabbeinu had no gaiva issues. Moshe Rabbeinu was onov mikol adam. And therefore, since Moshe Rabbeinu was onov mikol adam, there's no fear that he'll become a baal gaiva. And going with nine lefnim usually leads itself to gaiva, but not for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was onov mikol adam. So that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to go with nine lefnim, but not so Aaron HaKohen. There's Yerushalmi Maseches Yuma, a very famous Yerushalmi, because very often people quote it at Levayas. Yerushalmi says that why does the Torah lump together the sugya of Yom Kippur, the parasha of Yom Kippur, with the passing of Nadav Avihu? Nadav Avihu died already. So the Yerushalmi says it comes to teach us that Misa Tzadikim is Mechaperis. Just like Yom Kippur is Mechaper, just like Yom Kippur experience is a cleansing experience, so too when a Tzadik dies like Nadav Avihu, it's a Kapara experience. But then there's another part of it. Medrash also says that there's another place where we learn out that Misa Tzadikim is Mechaper, that's by Miriam. Because when the story of Miriam, it's written right next to the story of the Paraduma. So Chazal make the same drasha. Just like the Paraduma is Mechaper, so too Misa Sadikim is Mechaper, referring to Miriam. So the Chassam Sofer is bothered, why do I need two sources for the same idea? Why do I have one source in this week's parasha, and why do I have another source by the Para and by Misa Miriam? Now the truth is, the Paraduma is not really a Mechaper. The Paraduma is really a mitaher. It's a different experience, which maybe we'll touch upon a little later this evening as well. But the Chassam Sofer has a beautiful idea. He explains that Misa Tzadikim is a unique experience. When a tzaddik dies, it could either be a kapara for the mass, or it could be only a kapara for the individual. So how does it work, explains the Chassam Sofer. He says it depends on how the people react to the Misa Tzadikim. If the people react with a sadness and a mourning that the tzaddik dies, then the tzaddik's passing will be a kapar for all the people. But if they're not, they don't care. It's business as usual. There's no sense of sadness, no sense of loss, there's no hesped, there's no anything. then it will only be for the individuals. And he explains that when it came to Miriam's passing, the world did not properly mourn Miriam's loss. They didn't realize what Miriam was. So then it was not mechaper for everyone. It was only mechaper for those individuals, like the paraduma. The paraduma is not mechaper for every person. It's only mechaper for that person who gets sprinkled. So the Vesezach Sam Sofer, when Miriam died, only few people tapped into what her death meant. So only those people obtained kapara. But Yom Kippur, we know, is a day for everyone. Why? Because when it came to Nadav Avi, the Torah tells in Parsha Shemini, and we spoke about this 2 weeks ago, everyone cried on their passing. When everyone cries, everyone gets a kapara. Very interesting idea from the Chassam Sofer. But the Meshech Chachma takes it a step further. The Meshech Chachma says, why is Misa Tzadikim like Yom Kippur? He says, because everyone knows Yom Kippur is a different day. You feel Yom Kippur. The day carries Kedusha. Therefore, says the Meshech Chachma, the only way you can get Misa Tzadikim is Mechaper is if you are Margish the Tzadik. How does it work? So many people have, a person lives in their community, big Talmud Chacham, big Rav, and they never Mechaper him. They don't speak highly of him. They don't respect him. Then all of a sudden, when he dies, Shiny's Kaidish Kadoshim. So the Meshech Chachma doesn't work that way. It's just like Yom Kippur. Just like Yom Kippur, if you don't feel the Kedushas Hayoyim, the day won't do anything for you. So too, if you're not Margish the Tzaddik when he's alive, if you don't appreciate him when he's alive, his passing will have no impact, will make no difference, and will not give you a kapar. But it needs explanation. Why is Misa Tzaddik in Mechaper? It's like a magic trick. Misa Tzaddik, boom, everyone gets forgiveness. So I thought the pshat was, is that Misa Tzaddik is Mechaper for two ways. One way I thought the pshat maybe is because when a Tzaddik dies, is the first time you really get insight into his life. Right? That's when they start reading, that's when they start making the storybooks, and that's when stories come out. You don't really always get to see about a person's life until he dies. So when a Tzaddik dies, when you finally get to see what his life was like, you get inspired, you get motivated, that's a kapara. When you read a Gadol's book and you say to yourself, listen, this guy was unbelievable, he devoted so much time to Klal Yisrael, you get inspired, and therefore you want to grow. That inspiration causes you to get kapara. The other way I like to say it is that when a Tzaddik dies, it creates a void. There's a hole. We all need to step up and fill that hole. When we all decide to step up and fill that void, then we can obtain kapara, because now we're upping our game. We're becoming better people. I think my Rebbe said over by Rebbe Vajja was Nifter. He said, who's going to fill the void of all that Torah? Rebbe Vajja Yosef was a cheftza of Torah, the endless hours and tshuvas, and who's going to fill the void? So every time a gadol dies, whether that a gadol be a gadol b'Torah, a gadol b'chesed, a gadol b'maisim, someone has to fill that void. We need to replenish that. So we all need to up our games. We need to all be better. And by that we can obtain kapara. There's a fascinating medrash in this week's parsha. Unbelievable medrash. The medrash tells us that after Nadav Avihu died, Eov realized that he's in big trouble. After Nadav Avihu died, Eov realized that he's in trouble. What is going on over here? So the Mefarshim explained that Eov, we know Eov. What was Eov? The Chazal tell us that when Pare had his meeting of how to deal with the Jewish problem, he had his big meeting in Parshas Shmos. So who was at the meeting? So Eov was at the meeting, Yisro was at the meeting, and Bilam was at the meeting. So we all know that Yisro ran away. He was zeichet that his mishpacha should be in the Beis HaMikdash. He got Moshe Rabbeinu for a son-in-law. Bilam came up with the idea to kill the Jewish people. We know what happened to him. What did Eov do? So the Medrash says Eov was quiet. So Eov thought to himself that being quiet is an option. However, says Eov, I learned from this week's parasha that's not so. Why? Because there's a famous medrash, we spoke about this 2 weeks ago, that Nadav Avihu were walking down the street together. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Nadav Avihu were walking down the street, and Nadav turns to Avihu and says, I can't wait till those older rabbis die and we take over. Says Eov, Avihu never said a word, he just kept quiet. And yet he died also! So says Eov to himself, I see from over here that when you're quiet, and you hear something that's wrong, and you don't speak up, you're held accountable. So Eov said, now I'm in big trouble. I sat at the meeting of Parai and had to deal with the Jewish problem, and I kept quiet, and I thought silence was okay. Now I realize that silence is not okay. We live in a world that very often we see things, and we just keep quiet. We don't get involved, we don't make a rash, we don't make a stir. It's not right. When a person has to, something is wrong, you have to speak up. And it's also found in this, in Parshas Kedoshim. There's an Eben Ezra in Parshas Kedoshim who speaks out. It says by the Parsha, it says, Loi signoivu. It says in Parshas Kedoshim, don't steal in the plural. So the Ibn Ezra asks, why the plural? He says, because in every theft there's two people. There's the robber and the guy who watches it and says nothing. How many times do we know of things that are wrong and we just keep quiet? We don't want to get involved. We don't want to make a rash. We don't want to be that guy. Sometimes you need to speak up. If you see things are wrong and things are not correct, we need to speak up. And if not, the Medrash is telling us we are going to be held accountable. Just like Eov felt that he's going to be blamed. Just like Aviv. Aviv didn't say anything to Nadav. Nadav made a comment and Aviv just kept quiet and he listened. How many times do we listen to a lot of comments, you know, a friend will tell us, oh, that rabbi, he's such a no, and we'll just listen. Oh, you gotta get up and say, no, he's not such a bad guy. Or we'll hear Lashon Hara, and we'll just, you know, sit quiet and say, well, it's not me. We need to stand up sometimes and don't just be a listener, don't just be a passive bystander. When we see things that are not right, we need to step up, we need to speak about it. Now, my friend likes to quote this Daz Zekanim in this week's parasha. A little, you gotta be careful how you say it, but I'm gonna say it over b'shem him. Hopefully no one will yell at me. But we know that one of the things that Nadav Aviv did wrong is they didn't get married. They didn't get married, they never had a family. And we spoke Parsha Shmini about this, but the Das Kedem says the reason why they didn't get married was because they couldn't find any girls that were befitting for them. They couldn't find any girls that were hugenes lahem, were proper for them. So Rabbi Fran likes to say over that he tells a lot of his bachrim, he's a magid shir in the Yisrael, he has boys that are dating age, he says, you shouldn't be looking for Mrs. Perfect. I mean, none of you are looking for that perfect girl. There's no such thing as a perfect anything. None of us are perfect, so none of our spouses are going to be perfect. You shouldn't be looking for perfect. He said that was the mistake that Nadav Aviv, they were looking for perfection. They're the perfect girl. The perfect, nothing exists. No one's perfect. Kadosh Baruch Hu is perfect. We were all trying. So he was saying, Avada, you know, no one should say you should date a girl or marry a girl that you don't find attractive or you don't like. But perfection is not the character traits you're looking for. And that's the problem with the world we live in today, with Hollywood. Everything has to be perfect and everything has to, you know, bells and whistles, you know. My Rosh Yeshiva, Zalag Epstein, once told a boy who said he's waiting, you know, he's dating a girl, he doesn't hear bells and whistles. He says, you want to hear bells and whistles? Go to the train station, you hear bells and whistles. Now, we have in our mind, because of Hollywood, that, you know, what a relationship is supposed to be and what's supposed to be, it's all fake. None of that has any substance to it. But in any case, that was just a lesson that my friend likes to point out from this week's parsha about Nadav Aviv. One of the people in Jewish history that have often been referred to as the Kohen Gadol was the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim was a Kohen, and very often there are similarities between him and the Kohen Gadol. Nassim Adler was also a Kohen. He's also often referred to as the Kohen Gadol. Obviously, these are very glowing terms to refer to people, but they say over that when Rav Meir Shapiro was masbid the Chafetz Chaim, and Chafetz Chaim died in 1933, Rav Meir Shapiro didn't die that much after, but when Rav Meir Shapiro was masbid the Chafetz Chaim, he said that the Mishnah says in Yuma, that when the Kohen Gadol starts to fall asleep on Yom Kippur, so the kids snap, the Pirche Kohuna, Mak in the fun of, they try to wake him up to get him to not fall asleep. So Rameh Shapiro said about the Chafetz Chaim, he says that the Kohen Gadol sometimes, after 7 days of prep for Yom Kippur, he's already at a different madrega. He's so holy, he no longer can connect to us regular folk. So he says the Chafetz Chaim is like that also. He's so holy, he can't even be margish the lowliness of us. But he says, please, now that you're in Shemayim, don't forget us little people. Go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and beg HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to forget about us little people. Reb Chaim Moizer used to say differently about the Chafetz Chaim. He used to say that the Mishnah says that they used to wake up the Kohen Gadol. He says, no, the Kohen Gadol wakes us up. He says that we today are asleep. We don't know what's important. And the Chafetz Chaim comes and wakes us up. And he gets us all fired up about this organization and about that need. He says, today it's the opposite. Instead of the kids waking up the Kohen Gadol is waking up the kids. That's what they said about the Chafetz Chaim. The Mishnah says over there also that what they used to do was, if the Kohen Gadol would fall asleep, and they wanted to keep him up because they didn't want him sleeping on Yom Kippur, he was afraid he'd see Kerry. So what they used to do was, they used to read him from stories of Navi. They used to read him from Eov, they used to read him from Ezra. So I saw a beautiful pshat from Rav Moshe Sternbuch. He explains that a lot of times during, maybe I saw this from Rav Pam, I'm sorry, from Rav Pam. Again, I see a lot of different things. I don't always remember where I see things, so if I incorrectly quote someone, I apologize, but this, I believe, is Rav Pam's idea. Rav Pam explains that during Bayis Sheni, the Kohanim Gedolim were not exactly the best of people. They were very often, they were only Kohen Gadol for 1 year, because after Yom Kippur, they usually would die because they didn't do the right thing. They weren't tzaddikim. So he says that the reason why they used to read from Eov and Ezra was because you wanted them to realize what their job is. Those Nevi'im talked about how Bayis Rishon looked. And you're now holding Bayis Sheni. You need to read about whose footsteps you're trying to step into, whose shoes you're trying to step into. You're trying to fill someone's shoes that was a great person. You got to realize what you're doing. And Rav Pam explains that this is an important lesson for life. But very often in life, sometimes you have to step into someone's shoes and fill in. You know, whether it be as a parent, you know, you're the next generation, whether it be as a grandparent, whether it be taking over someone's job. But sometimes you have to look back and realize, wow, whose shoes am I trying to fill? Who am I trying to live like? Who am I trying to continue the Messiah? It's not a small thing. It's a very daunting task to realize that you have to up your game because you're trying to continue a legacy. You're trying to continue something very special and very, very, and very big. So the pasuk continues that Aaron HaKohen is not permitted to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim except Bezais Yavai Aaron Al HaKodesh. With this, Aaron is permitted to enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So there's a famous comment based on the Zohar that the Bezais was supposed to refer that the year Bezais was the year that Yavai Aaron, that Aaron HaKohen was going to come Al HaKodesh, that Mashiach was supposed to come. What was the year Bezais? It equal to the year 1648. You know, about, 300 years ago, give or take, 400 years ago, a little more than 400 years ago. Now, what actually happened in the year 1648? 1648, 1649 was a terrible year for Jews, at least Eastern European Jews, because in the year 1648, 1649 was the terrible Khmelnytsky revolution, where Khmelnytsky went around killing thousands upon thousands of Jews in Ukraine and other parts of Eastern Europe. It's interesting, if you go to Ukraine, I never went to Ukraine, I have a Talmud who went to Ukraine. If you go to Ukraine, they actually have a huge statue of Khmelnytsky. In Ukraine, he's a hero. He's supposed to represent the revolution of the working people. He was a behemoth. He led the people just to kill the Jews. It wasn't any great revolution. It was a revolution against people that had jobs and people who made money versus the people that were poor. That's a revolution. Okay. That's a revolution, but today he's considered a hero in Ukraine. But in any case, thousands of Jews died that year. So they asked the Shach, the great commentator, the Sifsei Kohen, on the side of the Reb Shapsi Kohen, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, what we always refer to when we learn Yeridaya. What happened? What went wrong? I thought Bezais was supposed to be the year. So the Shach explained that it says in Tehillim, Zeh Hayoyim, we say, Zeh Hayoyim Osa Hashem, Me'es Hashem, Me'es Hashem Hoyse Zeus. This came from Hashem. Don't ask questions. He neflois beinenu. This was hidden from us. We don't understand why did 1648 not turn into the geula. He said because zehayoyim also Hashem nagila. He says because we didn't fulfill the zehayoyim. What's the zehayoyim? It's referring to passing into hill, and that means you have to keep the Torah. We didn't do what we were supposed to do. 1648 could have been the year for the geula, but we didn't keep our end of the deal. And therefore, since we didn't keep our end of the deal, we were not zeiche to see the geula take place. Others say it differently. Others say that it had the potential to be so great, and anything that has the potential to be so great has the opposite effect if not fulfilled. Not only wasn't it a great year, it was a horrific, terrible year where so many thousands of Jews were brutally killed. Rashi says that the word Bezois is referring to the years of the first Beis HaMikdash, 410. So many people ask, what happened to the second Beis HaMikdash? The first Beis HaMikdash is the only thing you care about. Why don't you care about the second Beis HaMikdash? Many Tirutzim are given. One of the answers given is that over here we're referring to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which had the Aron in it. The Aron was not around during Bayis Sheni. It was hidden. So that's why we refer to the first Beis HaMikdash instead of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Soloveitchik said at his father's Levaya, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, he said something which is, today would be controversial, but if you know where they're coming from, it makes a lot of sense. He explained the Lithuanian mentality. The Lithuanian mentality was not to be very emotional. It was not to be very forthcoming with your emotions. It wasn't to share your emotions. It was more reserved. So he explained, why was that the Messiah? Why was that Lithuanian style? So he said, because emotions are like the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They're supposed to be hidden, not for everyone to see, not for everyone to have. He was medamed to this week's parasha. This week's parasha, we see that there are things that are kept private that are not supposed to be accessed to the mass on demand. Today we live in a world that everything comes out. A guy goes to the bathroom, he has to post it, everyone has to know. People have these channels, you follow everywhere they go. Kilo, I care what you do with your life. But someone was just telling one of my talmidim was telling me today that there's a YouTube channel for a guy who drinks milk a certain way, does this a certain way. Kilo, I care enough to watch how you drink milk or drink soda. But that's the world we live in today. Everything that happens has to be public. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said about the Lithuanian way of doing things were emotions. He was referring to, you know, the fact that, you know, giving praises and expressing how you feel. Today, we're different with emotions. Today, we have to be more forthcoming with our emotions, or we're not going to raise healthy children. But he said that that's a very sacred thing. Emotions are very sacred. They're very special. Special, sacred things are not open for everyone to see and be expressed at any time. Again, today, it's not what therapists would suggest, but it's just an interesting insight into Lithuanian Jewry or Lithuanian mentality of earlier years. Rav Pam makes this observation, as the Chofetz Chaim does as well. One of the first jobs the Kohen did on Yom Kippur was Ketairis. He was makir the Ketairis lefnai lefnim. What was the purpose of the Ketairis? So Chazal tells the Ketairis was mechaper on Lashon Hara. So says the Chofetz Chaim, can you imagine the holiest day of the year? What's the first thing the Kohen Gadol does? He's busy with Lashon Hara. You think he's got bigger affairs to be busy with, bigger with Chayvei Krisus and Chayvei Mises Bezdin, we gotta get Slicha from. Says the Chofetz Chaim, you're making a mistake. The first thing the Kohen Gadol needed to get Slicha v'Kapar was Lashon Hara. Why? And we explained this in other Chumash Shurim, is that Lashon Hara creates a terrible divide between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It creates a wall. Chofetz Chaim talks about this in the Sefer. Now, many people wonder why the tefillos aren't heard. It's because we create a huge wall between us and Hashem when we speak Lashon Hara. So therefore, I think the pshat is that before we can even talk about building a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu to get Slicha v'Kapar, we got to bring that wall down. If we have a huge wall between us and Hashem, how do you think we're going to get any Slicha on Yom Kippur? How are we going to get anywhere? So we got to bring that wall down of Lashon Hara with the Ketairis. Now we can start talking. Now we can at least talk somewhat face-to-face, kaviyach, with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But as long as we have that Lashon Hara hanging overhead, it's not going to go anywhere. We're not going to have any chance of getting Slicha v'Kapar. Pasuk continues. Pasuk tells us that Aaron HaKohen, the Kohen Gadol, does the Kapara. V'chiper ba'adoy uva'ad beisoy. And he should obtain Slicha for himself and for his family. The Gemara says, Beisoy u'ishtoy. Opening Mishnah, Maseches Yumin, the Mishnah tells us that the Kohen Gadol had to have been married in order to be the Kohen Gadol. And that's why the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda says, we even gave him a backup wife. Because let's say his wife would die, he needs to be married. Points out of Moshe Sternbuch. Look at the contrast to the Christian world. We're so machbid that our Kohen Gadol needs to be married, we got to give him a backup wife. And how does it work in the church? They're married to God. They don't even have a wife. Look at the two extremes. They have no wife. We have the wife as a focal, essential role in Yom Kippur. A Kohen Gadol cannot do the avoid if he's not married. Why? Because it completes him. A wife completes who you are. You think otherwise, but that's not true. You are not a full, you cannot do your capacity, you cannot fulfill your job, your tafkid achayim, if you don't have your wife. And says Rav Moshe Sternbuch a step further. Many people like to say that in the Orthodox world, we treat women like second-class citizens. Says it's the opposite. Look how much respect we give to the wife. The Kohen Gadol can be the biggest gadol in the world, but if he's not married, he can't do the job, because he's not full, he's not complete. He's missing in his shleimus, his entirety. Why? Because his wife completes him. For all those people who think that we treat women as second-class citizens, it's absolutely not the case. We have an immense respect for women. Such a respect and an admiration that the Kohen Gadol can't do his job if he doesn't have a wife. And this reminds me of what Rabbi Soloveitchik would say about why the Torah doesn't allow women to be judges. And why does the Torah not allow women to be witnesses? So people say it's because we don't value women. And he says it's exactly the opposite. It's because we value our women so much, we don't want them being front and centered. We don't want them being everyone looking at them and everyone talking about them. We want them to be behind the scenes. Kol kvud bas melech pinima. She doesn't have to be front and center. Which is why Rabbi Soloveitchik was against. He wasn't so bothered by the fact that women's pages and women's pictures are not front and center in many things. Because that's not that diminishes who they are. Because we have an immense respect for our women is exactly why we don't want them doing certain things and certain jobs. It's the exact opposite of what people think. Rabbi Yosef Nechemya Kornitzer points out that the Kohen Gadol did three kaparas on Yom Kippur. He was mechaper for himself, mechaber for his family, and mechaber for all of Klal Yisrael. And he explains, this corresponds to the three parts of who we are. We all really have three parts to us. We have the Ani, myself, we have our family, and we have all of Klal Yisrael. And that was what the Kohen Gadol was getting Slicha v'Kapar for. The three parts that represents all of us. We all have three parts in our life. We're all focused on ourselves, our own well-being, our success. Then we're worried about our family, children, grandchildren, spouse, extended family. And then we worry about everyone else. So the Kohen Gadol also did Slicha v'Kapara for those three parts of who we are. Then we find in this week's parasha a unique experience of the Sa'ir La'azazel. We find something that we don't find anywhere else. We find that there's two animals, two Se'irim, two goats. One goat is brought into the Beis HaMikdash, and it has a smicha on it, and then it's makriv like a normal carbon. Then we have another animal that basically we take, we give it a walk, and we throw it off a cliff. A very, very strange phenomenon, which the Rishayim tumble about. What's it all about? What does it signify? But Reb Zalman Sirotkin says he asked his brother-in-law, Reb Aaron Wolkin, once, the Beis Aaron, the great Reb Aaron Wolkin. He asked him once, it's very strange. The Sa'ir La'azazel is the animal that we put all our averis on. All the worst averis go on that animal that goes for a walk and thrown off a cliff. The animal that gets all the attention, the animal that's in the Beis HaMikdash, the animal that the Kohen Gadol is busy with, that's only mechapeh for Tumas Mikdash Ukdashuv. For just people that are not careful with coming into the Beis HaMikdash B'tumah. He says, it doesn't seem to make sense. Why is it that the animal that gets all the kapara is not even acknowledged? Yet the animal that the Kohen Gadol is so busy with his hands in the Beis HaMikdash, that's only for very specific things. And he explains, because the Sa'ir La'azazel has the most dramatic effect. When you watch the animal being plunged off a cliff, you say to yourself, that cliff, that animal is supposed to be me. So it creates, it stirs inside an emotional fear. This is what we mentioned earlier, that emotional, fear. So here also, so the Sa'ir La'azazel, that stirs emotion, that emotion creates kapara. But the Sa'ir La'ashem, it doesn't, it's like a carbon, a lot of karbonas. And therefore, it does only machape for certain things. There's a Mardik Gemara, I think it's a Gemara, Mishnah, that it says the Yakire Yerushalayim. Again, the halach is the animal that went La'azazel was walked by an individual. He walked the animal La'azazel, but it says the Yakire Yerushalayim. The important people of Yerushalayim used to walk along with him so he shouldn't walk alone. Now, if you stop and think about it, you could have either watched the Beis HaMikdash and watched the Kohen Gadol in action, or you could take a walk with a goat to a cliff. What would you pick? So we'd all pick going to the Beis HaMikdash. But when you think about another Jew and you say to yourself, how can I let this Jew walk by himself? I feel bad for him. Why should he be by himself? It really brings out the meat of loneliness. We often take for granted, what does it mean to be alone? There are people that are lonely. Many people are lonely. People live by themselves. People don't have family. They're lonely. Loneliness is a terrible midah. It's a horrible feeling. So we don't want this guy walking by himself. So I'm willing to forego my watching the Beis HaMikdash so he's not by himself, so he's not lonely. And that connects to Pesach Sheni. Upcoming Monday is Pesach Sheni. What was Pesach Sheni? These Jews said, you know what? I want to bring a carbon Pesach. But I see that there's bones of Yosef, or this Tamei Mace that needs my attention. I'm not going to leave it. I'm going to give up my own personal wants for someone else. That is the highest level of selflessness. It means I'm going to push aside my own wants and needs for someone else. I think it's an important lesson. Very often in life, we always put ourselves first. That's just a teva. But sometimes we have to be able to put ourselves on the side and look at someone else's predicament. We know it's late. We know that Yom Kippur is just an amazing day. I spoke about this, I don't know if I mentioned this here, that Leil Seder is very much like Yom Kippur. Leil Seder and Leil Pesach have a lot, and Leil Yom Kippur have a lot of similarities in Hashkafa. One of the similarities that I draw that I find is interesting is that Leil Seder, all people come to the Seder, all walks of life, irrelevant to their religious connection, they will come to a Seder on Leil Pesach. Just like Leil Yom Kippur, you'll have people from all Dalet Kanfei Haaretz who are very not connected to religion, they'll show up to Shul Leil Yom Kippur. Leil Yom Kippur has a kayach to inspire people. So it's interesting, I came across a fascinating story with the Blues of the Rebbe. The Blues of the Rebbe was in the camps during the Holocaust. And as Yom Kippur came close, some of the inmates asked the Rebbe, can you please speak to the Kapo? The Kapos were the Jews that were in charge of other Jews. Generally, they were not religious, and they were more anti-religious more than anything, and they were very mean to the Jews. So they asked the Rebbe, will you speak to the Kapo to try to convince them to give us off Yom Kippur? Which really was a bracha levatala, because these Kapos had very little interest in spiritual growth. But the Blue Jew Rebbe said, I'll do it. So he went to speak to a certain kapo, and the kapo said, you know what? I'll do it. I can't help you at night because it's not my shit, but during the day, Yom Kippur day, I will set you up with jobs that you won't have to do malacha and you'll be able to fast. Kapo. While they set this up, the Nazis burst in, and they make all the inmates eat, because they knew it was Yom Kippur, and they were so sadistic, they were so evil, the Nazis, they wanted to break the Jews emotionally, spiritually, and physically. They said, I want you all have to eat, and if you don't eat, we're going to kill you. And the Kapo refused to eat because it was Yom Kippur. The Nazi picked up his gun, shot him on the spot, and he died. And the Blue Rebbe was Nispal. This was a Yid who had no connection to Judaism, but he was not going to eat on Yom Kippur. That's the koyach of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur has a power. It can bring back those people that are so disconnected. Yom Kippur has a power to bring them back, to bring them to their shayrish, to bring them to what is important. Okay. I want to get to Pashas Kedoshim as well. Let's just finish up a little bit more about Pashas Achrimos. The Pasuk tells us, at the end of the whole Avodas Yom Kippurim, so the Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Lamed Daled, Pasuk says that Aaron did what he was supposed to do. He did whatever Moshe commanded him. So Rashi says, what does that mean? So Rashi says, "Kishegiyah Yom Kippurim also kesedar azeh." When Yom Kippur came, Aaron followed all the rules. Ulahagid shvachah shel Aaron. This is teaching us the praise of Aaron. Shelo yahayolav shon ligadlusan. Elokim mekayim zir samelch. That when Aaron put on that clothing, and when Aaron went to do his job, there was no gaiva involved. He was doing it just because kekayim zir samelch. He was a servant. He wasn't thinking of himself higher, greater, better. He was just serving HaKadosh Baruch. So Rabbeinu Chlibus also points out over here. He says that there are many levels of Lashma. It's not so simple to do things Lashma. You know, people talk about, you know, everything's Lashem Shemayim today. There are so many layers and levels of doing something authentically Lashma. Really Lashma. And he goes on to speak about the Kayach of Talmud Torah Lashma. Learning Torah Lashma. The Mishnah says in Avos that one of the greatest things in the world is learning Torah Lishma. But what's Torah Lishma? So we all know the famous Avnei Nezer, the famous Sachet Shavu. The Sachet Shavu says in his Akdama to Igli Tal that people think that if you learn Torah and you enjoy it, that's not Torah Lishma. He says it's absolutely not correct. Torah Lishma means you're learning it and you're loving every second of it. You're enjoying every Chakira and every Nafkemina and every Diyuk. You're loving it. That's Torah Lishma. So Abhenach says another Deher in Torah Lishma. He says, let's say a guy is learning Halacha L'maisa. So Allah Maisa. He says that's an unbelievable level of Torah Lishma. You're learning because you want to know, am I allowed to eat this or not? Am I allowed to use the Erev or not? Am I allowed to cook this or not? That's Torah Lishma. And then he says something which I think is very indicative of the Messiah that he gave over to his Talmidim. He says, and if you're learning Torah so you can teach others, that's also a very high level of Torah Lishma. Right? In Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva, they have their mantra is to go out and teach Torah to the mass. So Hanukkah writes that when you teach, when you learn Torah, and you say to yourself, oh, I learned something new, I'm going to teach it. But you don't have to do this. I'm adding. It's not only in Kiruv. You know, you learn something, you go home to tell your family, tell your wife, you tell your kids, you know, I learned a new halacha. That Torah that you learned was Torah Lishma, which is the highest level of Talmud Torah. Okay, one last ha'ara on Parashas Achrimais, and we need to move on to Parashas Kedoshim. One of the themes in Parashas Achrimais is, at the end it talks about the Nevel and Trefa. What we're allowed to eat, animals we're not allowed to eat. So just I have to say over this Maisa, Mordekim Maisa with the Chassam Sofer and the Yismach Moshe. The Yismach Moshe was Rav Moshe Teitelbaum. He was the ultimately the front runner for Satmar Chassidus today, even though it took a while till it got down there. But the Yismach Moshe was a Rebbe. He originally started off as a Litvisher, became a Rebbe. And he was very close with the Chassam Sofer. And at that time, and we're talking about the late, mid to late 1700s, Hasidism was just getting started, really. But the Yismach Moshe was a big Talmud Chacham. He started off being a Litvish God, only later on he became a Hasidish Rebbe, but he was a big Talmud Chacham. He wrote Svarim, Heshev Moshe, we quoted from his Svarim and some of our Halacha Shurim. So at that time, they used to have a practice that before Pesach, they used to like stuff the geese with corn to make them fat, because they wanted them to produce. So there was machlokes between the Chassam Sofer and the Yismach Moshe, whether or not stuffing the corn down their geese's throat will cause them to become a treifa. The Chassam Sofer paskin, it does not, it's not a problem. And the Heshev Moshe paskin, it is a problem. So there's this big machlokes achrayim between the Chassam Sofer and the Heshev Moshe, the stuffing the animals down create the treifas. So they decided, let's take a test. So the Chassam Sofer took 10 animals and he stuffed them down. He shechted the animals, and every one of the animals that the Chassam Sofer shechted was kosher. And then the Rav Moshe Teitelbaum did the same thing. And every one of the animals that he shechted were treif. meaning the halacha represented the metzias. The Chassam Sofer said it does not create treifas. The Taka didn't create treifas. The Heshev Moshe said it creates treifas. Every animal that he shefted, the Taka had a treifa in it. Just to see the koich ha-psak of gedolim, because Baruch Hu Mamed changes the metzias to fit what they thought is the proper halachic rules. Okay, enough for Parashas Achimus. Let's get into Parashas Kedoshim. Parashas Kedoshim. Parashas Kedoshim. No, one more word on Parashas Achimus. I apologize. Maybe two more words on Parashas Achimus. It says in the end of Parashas Achimus, it says a famous pasuk, a pasuk that we spoke about at length in our Sunday morning share. Pasuk says in the end of Parashas Achimus, it says, "V'chai bohem," that a person has a mitzvah to live. Ushmartim eschukoisei v'esmishpatai asher ayaso isam adam v'chai bohem. You have to live. So the Gemara makes the drasha that you're not allowed to give your life. You have to live. V'chai bohem means the person has to do whatever he can do to stay alive. But the Ger Rebbe had a different shot. The Ger Rebbe said v'chai bohem means that Torah should be your life. This should be what you live for. This is what should excite you. This is what should be your connection to the world. Right, many people get excited about different things. Some people get excited about, you know, we can go to baseball games now, they get very excited. Madison Square Garden opened, they got excited. Some people get excited, and I can go back to Shurim. That's what excites them. What is your life? What is your excitement? What is your air? What is your oxygen, Dr. Ger Rebbe? V'chai behem, the Torah is supposed to be your oxygen. It's supposed to be your connection. Okay. So Parashas Kedoshim opens up with the famous pasuk, Kedoshim Tiyu, you should be holy. So we all know the famous machloek is Rashi and Ramban. How does one go about fulfilling Kedoshim Tiyu? How do you go about fulfilling the mitzvah of being holy? So Rashi says, Prushim and Arayis. All you have to do is not do any Arayis. Sit back in your house and don't live with anyone you're not supposed to. You fulfill the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu. The Ramban has his famous pshat, Shalaitei Novel Berushus HaTorah. Novel Berushus HaTorah means you're not supposed to indulge. You're not supposed to indulge in that is permitted. That is Chol Yisrael, and that's Pas Yisrael, and that is Shechita. Don't indulge in that either. Even the things that are permissible, a person should not indulge in as well. Again, every Rebbe and Mashkiach and Rav has his own twist on what's included in Shalaitei Novel Bershas HaTorah. When I was in Yeshiva, my Rebbe told us it means we shouldn't have Slurpees. Slurpees are big up, one of those two things. He thought that's Novel Bershas HaTorah. Okay, everyone has their own taste. Novel Bershas HaTorah, don't eat so much steak. Maybe sushi is Novel Bershas HaTorah. I happen not to like sushi, so I could say that sushi is Novel Bershas HaTorah. Whatever. Novel Bershas HaTorah means indulging. We live in a society today where we all indulge. We are totally indulging in Kashmis. There's so much of it, and it's all kosher. It's totally kosher. There's the Bishul Yisrael and it's Chalav Yisrael. It's all kosher. No shalav kashrus. But are we indulging? Are we eating more than we need to? Are we enjoying life more than we need to? Should we take a step back and rethink all that we do? But many Mefarshim point out from this week's parasha, although it's not the source and halacha for it, but Kedoshim Tiyu also means that we're supposed to be holy. We're supposed to be walking with the banner of Yiddishkeit. We're supposed to be a walking Kiddush Hashem. You know, all of us, all Jews walk around with a major achrayis. We look Jewish. We got the yarmulke, we got the beard now, right? We all look Jewish. You know, it's an achrayis. Walking around this year is an achrayis. Are we going to be mekadeshim shemayim? Are people going to speak and think highly of Jews? Are people going to say, ugh, those Jews, they're always trying to rip us off and this, that, and the other. I was in a grocery store here in the Queens community, I'm not going to say which store, and the Goyish guy by the counter, I'm very friendly with, and he was telling me, he said, you know, I got a problem with you people. I said, why? He works the deli counter. He said, you know, you guys come to the deli counter and you're trying to figure out what you want to order. He says, you're supposed to do that before you come to the counter. And then you start trying to figure out how much do you really want. Do you want a quarter? Do you want a third? He's like, why don't you guys figure this out before? He says, I try to be nice about it, but it starts to get to me. And I was mortified. Like, what am I supposed to say? You're right. We make mistakes, you know? But that was a Chil Hashem, you know? You know, we have to be careful that, you know, the workers we work with, again, I don't have the privilege of working, sometimes I call it a privilege of being in the secular world. A person in the secular world, he has an opportunity, much more than I do, to be Mekadeshim Shemayim. You work with Goyim, you deal with Goyim. You know, I have a fellow in my shul who owns an exterminating company, so he sent me an exterminator to come exterminate my house. The guy looked like a punk rocker. He had tattoos all over his body, piercings. I wasn't even going to allow him into my house, except for the fact that I knew that it was sent by a close friend. And he told me, he said, you want to know? He said, you know how many people didn't want to give me a job because of the way I look? But this Orthodox Jew, he gave me a job. He gave me a chance. He sat down with me, talked to me. He saw that I'm not what I look like. And he gave me, in the working world, you have such an opportunity to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. It's amazing. Every interaction that you have with another person, even if he's Jewish, he's not religious, to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim and Chas V'Shalom, it's the Hepach. Because you're always around, you're always making that Kiddush Hashem. Sometimes we can accidentally make a Chil Hashem. They say over in the 1960s, the Gates at Yeshiva in England wanted to do some building. And some of the locals wanted to stop it. They didn't want the yeshiva to build. And they figured, who are they going to get to convince the neighborhood to block any building of the Gates of the Yeshiva? The local Protestant minister. They figured the Protestant guy who lives on the block, he's a minister, he's for sure going to hate Jews. He's for sure going to block the building of the Gates of the Yeshiva. And they came to him and he said, absolutely not. He said, these people are wonderful. He said, I watch them, I see them, they're nice, they're respectful, they're caring. I have no problem with them building. Let them build all they want. It's amazing Kiddush Hashem. We can be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim in such a powerful way. Okay. So the pasuk continues. Ish imoy v'aviv tira'u. This week's parasha is the source of not kibud avim, but yiras aviv imoy. A person has an obligation to fear his parents. The Gemara says in Kedushin, kibud is different than yira. Yira is fear. It means you don't contradict them. It means you don't sit in their seat. You don't do a bunch of other halachas. But one of my favorite Ksav Soifers in this week's parasha. The Ksav Soifer says, it says, Ish imoy v'aviv tira'u. A man, his mother and his father, he should fear. So the Ksav Soifer writes that the word ish usually means chashivas. The pasuk is saying ish. You're a chashiva guy. You're a big, wealthy, successful businessman. You have your own family. You're already a grandfather. You know what? Aviv imoy tira'u, you still have to fear your parents. No matter how big you are. And you're big. You're a big hotshot. You're an ish. You're a gavra. You're successful. You made it. But you're still other than imoy tira'u. You still have to fear your parents. Which means if your parents say X, you can't say Y. And you still can't sit in your parents' seat. And you still can't do it. You still can't argue with your parents. Because you're an ish. Imoy v'aviv tira'u. You still have to make sure you honor and properly show respect to your parents. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky famously explained this pasuk. The pasuk seems to be very strange. The Torah lumps together ish imoy v'aviv tira'u. A man has to fear his parents. Ve'es Shabbos I say tishmayu, and you have to keep the Shabbos. What's the connection between the two? So we know Chazal tell us the connection is that if your parents tell you to violate your Shabbos, you don't have to listen to them. But Rabbi Yaakov had a different pshat. Rabbi Yaakov explained that Shabbos is the realization that Hashem runs the world. Hashem created the world. Says Rabbi Yaakov, the closer we are to Adam, the closer we are to perfection. Every generation further away from Bria Soilam is further away from perfection. So Yaakov explained that's why we fear our parents. We fear our parents because they're one generation closer to perfection. We're one generation further away from perfection. And that was the famous story that Rabbi Yaakov was on an airplane and was trying to debate with a non-religious Jew. It was actually one of the Knesset members. I forgot his name already. And they were trying to debate religion. And he wasn't this Knesset member. Until the end of the plane ride, he says, Rabbi, I have to tell you one thing. I'm amazed by the way your son shows you such respect and how he treats you. So Yaakov said, what's the big chiddush? He says, we respect our parents because our parents are one step closer to Adam, one step closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You think that the younger generation is cooler and better. So in your mind, the older you are, the less cool you are, so you're not going to respect him. We look at it the opposite. Our parents are one generation closer to perfection. They're one generation closer to Bria Sa'ilam. They're one generation to the way the world was supposed to be. So we respect them. So that was Rabbi Yaakov's famous statement. Now, Parshas Kedoshim had a lot of Adam L'Chaveri. For example, the Torah tells us about... You're not allowed to leave over payment till the morning. We actually, I believe, Michael, maybe you can confirm, we had a shiur about this, about paying your workers on time, which is something that many people are not careful with. And it's actually very negative. Very often people take babysitters. Right? You hire a babysitter for the night, and you don't have cash on you. Today we have Zelle, so it's not such an issue. But it used to be, you don't have the cash, so you don't pay it till the next morning. That's a violation of a law. Very often we don't think about paying our workers. We think about our workers don't count. You have to pay your workers on time, even if they're children, even if they're not choshev people. You still have to pay them. That's the famous joke that people say. There's a law in the Torah not to pay your workers on time. What's the one industry where people don't get paid on time? Yeshivas. Yeshivas are supposed to be the example of how to keep Torah mitzvahs, and they pay their rabbeim late. So they give a heter, because if you know when you're going into the job, you know they're going to pay you late, so it's mutter. But many, many mefarshim point out, it's really not right. No, we're supposed to pay on time. Maybe they again, we covered this in Halachasher. Maybe the Rebbe should get paid before the janitor, before the other vendors. And we have to be sensitive to these things. Like Salman Pula Socha, this is a real violation. Then we come to the next pasuk. We have the lava of Lifnei Iver L'Sitei Michshol, which is a very serious violation. Very often in life, we transgress this accidentally. We give advice, and our advice is lousy advice. Whether we know it or we don't know it, sometimes it's actually intended to be lousy because we want to mess the other guy over. That's the lava of Lifnei Iver L'Sitei Michshol. But I want to get to a pasuk. B'tzedek Tishpoit Amisach. In righteousness, you should judge your friend. So there's two pshatim in this pasuk. One pshat is kipshutai. You have to have honest judgment. Again, with a few minutes left, I'm just going to mention this. You know, for those of you that follow current events, for those of you who are following politics, there was obviously a massive court case yesterday about this shooting of this. Apparently now he's a saint, even though the person lived his life like the lowest shebelow, but now he's a gadol now because he died to prove a point. He didn't die to do anything. He died because he had so much drugs in his system, that's why he died. But okay, that's the way the world works today. He's a gadol also. But it used to be the judicial system was something we can rely on, but tzedek tishpoit. We have to have honesty. We have to have no politics, no outside forces. The jurors do what they do. But that clearly didn't happen last night. Again, without getting into all political talk, it was clearly a sign that we lost tzedek tishpoit amisach. We need to have that. If we don't have that, we don't have a country. We don't have a society. If we don't have a society, we can judge on, we have a judicial system that runs. Honestly, it's a very scary thing. And to me, that's a big pachat. I feel like we lost that element of this country. We lost the idea of having real, honest jurors giving an honest decision based on the facts, not based on the outside information, not based on mob mentality and mob rules. And that was something that we lost a little bit as a country this week. But there's another pshat in the pasuk. The other pshat in the pasuk is, Have we done the kalodim? The kavschos, which again, there's so many stories in our own life of where we had our own interactions of people where either they didn't judge us or we didn't judge them. The kavschos, and this, we thought they were doing this and they were really doing this. It's just, it's something that we should try to be more careful with, all of ours, to be done the kavschos. Then the next pasuk is, loiseilech rochel ba'amecho. That's the love of rechilos. We're now going to talk rechilos. So I saw a beautiful pshat. Why does it write the lava of rechilos next to the din of b'tzedek tishpoit amisecha? Because where does most lashon hara come out of? Court cases. Reuven and Shimon go to court, and Reuven's found guilty. So Levi, Yisachar, and Zvulun, they have a running commentary on what happened. That's rechilos. Oh, really? That's rechilos. You have no shaykhis to this interaction. It's none of your business. You shouldn't be discussing it. You shouldn't be talking about it. And then we have a very, very important pasuk. Torah says lo samad al dam riach. Don't stand on your brother's blood. And the Torah writes this right next to the law of L'Selech Rochel. Don't talk Lashon Hara. So many of Farshim point out that, you know, when it comes to Shidduchim, again, we had a three or four part series on Halacha, what you're allowed to say for Shidduchim. But one of the hardest things for Shidduchim is what I'm saying, Rechilas, is the Lashon Hara. Or what I'm saying is a violation of L'Samar Adam Reach. I know something about a situation, and if I don't say something, people's lives are going to be ruined. I'm not permitted to stand by and allow blood to flow, which includes ruining people's lives. If I know someone has something about him, again, there's ways of doing it. But just to keep quiet sometimes could be, their lives can be ruined. I'm going to let someone hire a guy who's going to rip him off. The guy's going to ruin his life. He's going to make him crazy. I'm going to just keep quiet. Not so partial. That's the balancing act in Shidduchim between the Isra of Achilus and with the law of Loisamar Adam Reach. Rebbe Chonon Wasserman had a gewaltig chiddush. He thought Leisamer Adam Reyecha means you have to do kiruv. If you just sit back and let your brothers die, you let intermarriage take over, you let the irreligious Jews continue to be irreligious, that's Leisamer Adam Reyecha. We have to step up, we have to step in, we have to make a difference, we have to be able to be makariv those that are far away and bring them closer to Yiddishkeit. The Ksav Sofer used to say that the hardest pasuk, the hardest mitzvah in the Torah to keep, is the art of rebuke. It is probably one of the hardest things to do is to give musr. And I would add, today, to give musr to children is even harder. It is very, very difficult to give musr to one's children because you want to be very careful in what you say and you don't want to lose them. You don't want to scare them off. You don't want to chase them away. But you want to give proper musr in a way that they understand and they feel loved, they feel compassionate, they feel connected. But they also realized what they did was wrong. Perhaps one of the most famous stories that I like to say over from from Rabbi Dr. Twersky Satzal, was a maestro that he says over about his own father. He says when he was a child, so he was a big chess player, liked to play chess, and he was quite good at chess. And he says one Rosh Hashanah they had a guest over in the house, and the guest asked him, he was a boy, the Dr. Twersky was around 10, 11 years old, and the guest asked him, do you want to play chess? So he says to the guest, on Rosh Hashanah, are you allowed to play chess? The guest said, yeah, why not? So they played chess, and word got back to Dr. Twersky's father that he played chess on Rosh Hashanah. So Dr. Twersky calls him into his study, and he says to him, chess on Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah, the Yemadin, pasnish to play chess. And he got the message. Dr. Twersky says he got the teichacha. And he says as he's getting up to leave the room, his father turns to him and says, but by the way, did you win? He says, yeah, I won both games. So his father said, oh, good, you won both games. So he says that was the greatest musar shmus, that his father was acknowledging he did something wrong, but he wasn't acknowledging that you're a bad person and you're evil and I don't care about you and I don't love you anymore, because he was asking him how to go. That's the balance of musar to children. It's very hard. It's showing I love you, I care for you, but I have to do this because this is your best interest. I need to be able to teach you and educate you and guide you for future generations. So echeich techiach with amisecha is hard. I think it's even more complicated with our own children, our grandchildren, our family members. It's a very, very difficult mitzvah to be able to fulfill. But again, this week's parasha, we'll close with this. We have the famous mitzvah, v'yahavta l'riacha kamoicha. Rabbi Akiva's mantra, Zeh, Klal, Gadol, B'Torah, this is what it's all about. Loving your friend like you do yourself, which is almost impossible. How can you love anyone as much as you love yourself? So it's worth reading the Rambam in Hilchas Deis. The Rambam explains, what does it mean, the Rambam says, you have to love every Jew like you love yourself. You need to say over good things about people. Why don't we like to say over nice things about people? Because we don't care about the other person. We like to say nice things about ourselves. So the Rambam, part of the Haftar Recha Kamech is saying nice things about other people. Sharing their, giving them compliments, pointing out their milas. He writes, and you have to be chos on the money, you have to worry about their money, just like you worry about your money. It's not just a feeling, the Haftar Recha Kamech. It's not just, oh, I feel you, I love you. It's practical. I gotta do things. I gotta talk nicely about you, I gotta compliment you, I gotta speak highly of you, I have to be worried about your money. It's not just a feeling. It's a lifestyle of how I connect to someone who's not me to fulfill the mitzvah of Ahavta Re'acha Kamoich, as we are holding now in the time of Meisr Talmidei Rav Akiva. Shaloi Nagu Kavod Zeh L'Zeh. We have to try to find ways to connect more to each other, not disconnect, but to connect, to appreciate, to value each other, to be misakin and to perfect the mitzvah of the Ahavta Re'acha Kamoich. Okay.